life is like science fiction.
was the kind of world we'd made. World we'd made. World we'd made. World we'd made.
And you are tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York and on the web at WBAI.org. I'm Mike Sargent, and I am here with the legendary Joe Massiri. Joe Massiri, are you there? Joe. Legend Jim. Says it that...
You muted
well,
me.
I did. You needed to be muted.
Censorship. So, First
I'm
Amendment.
Here with the legendary Joe Massiri and... The infamous Mike, infamous Mike from Jersey,
Iowa, yeah.
Who is claimed to fame as being able to do imitations of past night shift callers, and
most of which are probably
he's available
not with
for parties. All right,
but yes,
bar mitzvahs, and he'll be here all week. So, but a couple things I do want to say that here on Night Shift, last week we had a Women's History Month special. And stop with the clicking, Joe. Is that you with the clicking? Stop with the clicking.
Sorry,
huh?
Sorry.
Mute when you click. Mute when you click.
It's my teeth.
So, last week, like I said, we had a special here, a Women's History Month special. And Night Shift has become something where we have different kinds of shows. Sometimes we have a straight up life is like science fiction show. Sometimes we have interviews. Sometimes it's a encore presentation of a classic Night Shift episode. But then sometimes we get to just talk about a film or films, or in some cases, like when Leonard Nimoy passed, we did a whole Leonard Nimoy show. And as I was preparing for tonight's show, I don't know if you remember, we did a State of Star Trek show. Do you remember that? Do you remember that? We did a State of Star Trek.
Vaguely.
Yeah, State of Star Trek.
I don't think I participated in that.
This is 5 years ago. Anyway, this was done at State of Star Trek. It was just going through where we were in Star Trek. 53 years. Night Shift looked back at 53 years of Star Trek. And the future of the Federation. But Star Trek and sound bites from Star Trek and discussions and references to everything from Klingons to Romulans to the Prime Directive have often happened here on Night Shift. And of course, our theme and motto is that, or the overall sensibility is that life is like science fiction. But one figure stands out as definitely life is like science fiction himself, and that's of course William Shatner, someone who played somebody who went into space and then actually in real life went into space, and that's just bookends of his career. And there's a new movie called You Can Call Me Bill. It's called William Shatner, You Can Call Me Bill, and we have all seen it, and I saw it a while back, and I really wanted to hear what you, Joe Massiri, and you, Mike from Jersey, thought of the film. And then now here's something that I don't know if Mike from Jersey, I don't know if Joe Massiri revealed this to you, but Joe was an investor in this film. Did you know that?
I think I did. I think you told me.
Joe, this is a film you're an investor in. Now, Joe, I'm going to start with you, because before you tell me what you think of the film, how did you know about it? Why are you involved? Because what is Legion? Talk to us.
Legion is a fan-supported film production company that gets involved in the finishing financing of the film all the way up to totally originating concepts and seeing it through to distribution. You can go online to Legion M and find out about investing, because like I say, it is a fan financing platform, and they have a lot of different projects that they've been involved with over, I believe it was pre-COVID, so it's 5 years since the second round of investing opened up. I had met some of the original founders and like what they were trying to do, and so basically had a few bucks and threw it their way to join up and become part of it.
Well, just for those listening, they've actually specialized also in doing these films, these documentary films. The director, is it Alexandre Philippe? Is it, do you know how to pronounce his name? Joe Massiri? All right. Not so offhand. Alexandre Felipe, I believe is how you pronounce it. And he also, let me finish talking, Mike from Jersey. Don't interrupt the host. All right. He also did a film called Leap of Faith. That's a documentary on William Friedkin making The Exorcist. He made a film called Memory, The Origins of Alien, which I'm pretty sure you saw, and Mike from Jersey. And he did 78/52, the Hitchcock shower scene. So this is something that they do. And how did you get involved, Joe? Like, you just knew about it? Or, like, why and how did you get involved?
I had heard about it when I had been at a couple of film festivals, and the two gentlemen that started the company were there pitching it, getting some legs under it, and I gave it a year. I was looking to see what they were doing, and
you were sniffing around. You
know, I was interested, so I was interested. They do a bunch of different things. It was like, they just did this film, Mandor Fodor and the Talking Mongoose, which is based on an epic adventures of this parapsychologist that's most notably known in the UK. They're working on a project called Defiant, the story of Robert Smalls that they're in development on. They just finished up another project called The Man in the White Van. And people might remember one of their first films that they got involved with was Colossal, which was about the woman who, every time she got angry and stuff and whatnot, there was a kaiju that showed up and she controlled it. It was Anne Hathaway, and Jason Sudeikis was in it.
And I think we reviewed it here on the show, so yes.
Yeah. So,
you sniffed around, you knew the pedigree. I do want to come back to this after we talk a little bit about the film we hear from Mike from Jersey, but I do want to talk a little bit about the whole model of fan-owned, fan-based, crowdfunding model for making films. Because Mick, I don't know if Joe Masseri's name is in the credits.
That's awesome.
Joe Masseri's in the credits.
Everybody who's an investor at the end
but
in
that's
the crawl
part of the cool
day.
Thing. So, and of course, if it was shown on Netflix, you'll never see his name because they just shrink it down to a tiny box and then shift you onto the next program. Who the hell cares who made it? Anyway, so Mike from Jersey, you knew about this film before you saw it. What's your thought? Because I want to hear Joe's thoughts on it.
Well, yeah, I wanted to add to talk up Joe a little bit. First of all, this thing is not, it's not like a traditional, Joe can chime in. I would say that this is not like the addition, like a typical crowdfunding where you go to various things where you're funding a film or a video game. And what you basically do is you donate money and you say, I'm going to give you this amount of money and it's going to go towards blah, blah, blah. And they'll give you like a reward or whatever. They'll send you a t-shirt or whatever it is. And in those particular situations, it's a fundraiser. You give them the money. They're not obligated to actually finish the product, but rather they have to at least try to make it. And they try to make it and it works out or it doesn't work out. Whereas this is, in the traditional sense of filmmaking, it's a real investment. So Joe effectively acts as a kind of, he's an investor / producer, whatever, among all the other people that do the same. And I think it's very cool in that way because it adds to the, you really are, as opposed to just giving some money to a donation apparatus, it's a real investment.
And then we cut the commercial. No. All right, so.
I have no idea why I'm here. I don't know what I'm doing, talking about this.
I saw something, they saw something. There was a lot of light. That's all I know.
So, Joe Vasiri, that all being said, the context of how this film was financed, I had seen the film, and my brief review is that I was surprised at how insightful it was and how deep a guy Shatner is at this point. And it's, you forget, because he is this persona, and he doesn't take himself too seriously. And we've watched him through the decades. We always joked about, well, what wig, what hairpiece was he wearing in that decade? Oh, that was a 70s hairpiece. But the thing is that, as metaphorical as that may be, he has reinvented himself after Star Trek. There is multiple times. There was T.J. Hooker, and then there's hosting this thing, and even recently, I have to say, I really enjoyed him in his film Senior Moment that came out about 3 years ago. He was really good with it, with Christopher Lloyd, and I have been a fan of Shatner for a long time, and I'll tell you my Shatner story after I get your thoughts on the film. But I found the film surprisingly insightful, and it's interesting because the Life is Like Science Fiction part, like I said, is he's had this amazing life. He's never stopped working. He's never stopped interacting with people. He's never stopped doing things. He's never stopped putting his name on things. He's never stopped traveling and meeting people. And at this point, he really is a globally known icon. He is someone, he is literally a living icon at this point. What he did in his youth and at different points in his career, we're all, even if you're not a fan, you're aware of to some extent, you're aware of what he's been around. They've done bits, Star Trek bits at the beginning of the Academy Awards, you know, those kind of things. Like, that's how iconic all of Star Trek is, and people have done very well doing imitations of William Shatner. But I think that this film really gives you a look at what kind of a human being he is. I feel like this kind of rounds him out. So I really enjoyed it, and I didn't know what to expect. I thought it might just be like fan fluff, but I thought it was a surprisingly good documentary about a man who's an artist who's known for a lot of different things. So, Joe Vasiri, what did you think of the movie?
I thought it was interesting. I thought it wasn't a traditional documentary where it was an overview of his life. It was more of his philosophical take on his career. It's funny because he's become so green. I think he was just missing a beard and he would have sounded like Thoreau or Emerson kind of thing. Living out in the forest, getting back to nature. And at some point, you couldn't help but feel that his impending death, his sword of Damocles, was hanging over his head, and he embraces it very stoically and heroically, but you could definitely feel it influencing and overshadowing the documentary. And it wasn't like he was... You see some other documentaries where somebody waxes on about their career and the films that they've made and the people that they've interacted with and certain experiences on these projects that have been touchstones and how their careers have been formed. And he wasn't giving any sage advice, and he wasn't dishing any dish in terms of people that he interacted with. So it was a very soulful, felt, introspective look back on his career. And you could definitely feel the impact of him going up in the rocket and his outer space experience that has basically influenced and changed his life from now till when he departs us.
Right.
And I do want to know where I would go visit his tree where it's planted when he passes on. That would be like a pilgrimage to make. So there you go.
People are going to do that. That's going to become a thing.
Yes, the William Shatner Trequest.
So, Mike, from Jersey, what were your thoughts about the film? What did you think of the film? And were you excited to see it?
Yeah, I got to say, my opinion is more or less similar to Joe's. What I will say is that for people that aren't as intimately aware of Shatner's career, as I would say safely all three of us are, because we're all big fans of Shatner, it's easy to write him off, I think, as the guy in Star Trek and all the campy stuff where he sings Rocket Man and he does the Priceline commercials and so on. And to see him from that kind of caricature way. But there's a lot more to him than that. And on top of like the serious side of Shatner, this documentary definitely does paint a portrait of him as a real person with his thoughts and interests. And so as a portrait study, I think it's very interesting, even as someone who does know Shatner's career very well. It's very interesting to see him talk about that stuff. And it's also very interesting to see him continually harp on mortality. I've seen a few of his more recent talk show appearances. He was even on a news show, Morning Joe and MSNBC. And almost every time he's on one of these things, he brings up mortality. And his line that he likes to use is, I'm going to die. And so are you. And so it's obviously something that is on his mind. He just turned 93. And I actually, on a side note, I think it's interesting to note that while people are criticizing a certain person who's running for president right now, who is president, and talking about how old he is, Shatner's got 10 years on Joe Biden, and he looks and sounds
You think
amazing.
Shatner should run?
Maybe.
I think Shatner should run. I think Shatner for president.
Yeah.
Shatner for president.
He can barely
Shatner,
walk.
Listen to me.
I don't want to see him
was
run.
Fine. I saw him on something, and he was good. But listen,
he comes out in a leather jacket.
He's great.
Like,
listen, I love it. 93. I would be that at 93. But I like Mike from Jersey's I'm Gonna Die.
And so yeah, I've played that song several times on the show.
Well, that's life. You have to send me. Is if there's something you want me to cut to right now, I will cut to.
That's what the people say.
But now, a couple of things I want to say about the Shatner film, too, and ask your thoughts on. I really enjoyed also, as you said, Joe, he could be any philosopher. You live long enough, and he is an artist. Like we forget that he is dedicated. He won those Emmys. Let me tell you something. I saw every single episode of Boston Legal, every single episode.
You feel like a great lawyer now, Mr. Short?
I feel like a busy one. So if you're gonna shoot me, let's do it. I have plans.
What happened?
I don't know, I can't see. Okay, I see Alan. He's all right.
Sir, the phone is going to ring. We want you to pick it up, and we want you to talk to us.
No! See all the police outside? We must have a jumper. I hope it isn't Paul.
Denny, you don't know what's going on.
Why are you women in my office?
You really don't realize what's happening?
I think I do. Let's take off our clothes.
A man has a gun trained on Alan Shore out there. That's why the police are here.
Out there?
He's threatening to kill him.
Calm down, sir.
Why didn't anybody come and get me? All right, then.
Are you mad? I really don't think that's a good idea.
It's a fantastic idea.
Denny, the police are already here.
Yes, I can see they got everything under control.
Sir, we just want to have a conversation.
If that phone even rings, I'll shoot. Do you hear me? Taro, when I say open, you open that door.
I certainly will not.
I'm an ex-Marine. I was a trained sniper. Was it a pilot?
Mr. Flores.
Don't use my name!
Put that gun down. You'll get everybody killed.
Sir, we need to let your hostage go.
No!
We want to negotiate.
There's an Alan up there.
Give us all this. You can just answer.
I'm mainly a skeet shooter now. So when I yell, pull, that'll be your cue to yank open the door.
You are mad. Don't be afraid to kill us.
Sir, pick up the phone.
Don't make it ring! I'm warning you! I'll shoot, you hear me? Pull!
Denny Green.
That's rare for me. Every single episode and
you don't really watch TV.
I never watched TV. They sent me the DVDs. But I'm just saying, at the time, I watched every single episode. I loved it. Seeing Shatner and James Spader working together was great. And you could see how Spader was actually getting influenced by Shatner. You could see it. You could see in the progression because I watched every single episode. And I was binge watching it then because I had them on DVD and I didn't watch them when they were broadcast. And it was great. It's similar to, if you're old enough to remember, how William Katz's whole acting style became like Robert Culp after a couple seasons of Greatest American Hero. Anyway, point being that
By the way, one more quick thing just want to say. The only way you could top that between Spader and Shatner is to throw William Devane in the mix.
Maybe.
What are we talking about?
In terms of an overacting fest between the three of them.
There's plenty of overacting fests. We used to have this whole joke about certain people like Shatner, Big Rames, all of these people.
Christopher Walken
in Ham Fisted. And they'd all just, that would be the thing. So no, there are a lot of actors who, but the thing about Shatner is, as opposed to, which is why I love that photo I sent you of William Shatner and Lee Majors, because William Shatner always gives a performance and he's known for quote unquote overacting, whereas Lee Majors underacts. And I remember watching that episode of The $6 Million Man where William Shatner's a guest star and he's got this power. I don't know if you've ever seen the episode. He's got this power where he plays an astronaut, again, who went into space. And when he came back, he's got this power. Now he can hear dolphins and what they're saying. I can hear them. They're talking to me. Steve, I can hear the dolphins. And Lee Majors is like, I don't hear him, Andy. I don't know what you're talking about. And that's Lee Majors. And so the scene that right. Two of them, it's almost like they're in a different show. Because Shatner's so like bursting out of your TV screen. And Lee Majors is, well, he's really such an understated actor.
Andy, I shouldn't have dared you to come up the tower. I'm sorry. I didn't mean it. I take it back. Mr. Roots, I'm sorry. I tried to bring him down. Steve, don't come any closer. I can't control it. I'm burning right now, Steve. As an origin of a four-dimensional coordinate system. What position which is represented parametrically is plotted against an orthogonal time axis is given by x1 equals a cosine omega t, x2 equals a sine omega t plus b cosine gamma t, times 3 equals b sine gamma t. This, of course, ignores the ellipticity of the Earth's orbit around the sun.
So, I say all that to say that Shatner is iconic, and seeing him, though, you realize, or I came away with definitely, I came away liking him more. I want to know how you gentlemen felt as more or less Shatner fans.
I mean, I respect what he did. And as he often says in the documentary, what have I done that's anything?
That's what? That's worth anything?
No, what have I done that's really anything kind of thing? I'm just exactly. an actor and kind
I,
of thing.
That's the kind of stuff that I found that made me, I liked that he literally doesn't take himself too seriously. I think he's got an objectivity that I admire. Go ahead. What?
And the fact that he's been through it all, I think he sets an example of realism for other actors who are coming up after him. And that's a valuable in and of itself lesson kind of thing, which I don't know. I think he has something to offer and maybe he should have taught some acting classes.
That's interesting because I can see that as a skit on Saturday Night Live, like William Shatner teaches acting, masterclass acting.
But he wasn't that over the top in his earlier works.
I don't think he's really that over top. I think he's just, he also talked about how some of that was just him trying to remember the line, which I love. I don't remember the line. So I love that whole, and what's your, is you have a favorite moment in the documentary? Because I have a couple.
Definitely.
What's your favorite moment there, Mick?
It's a couple momentary things. First of all, Shatner talking about, which is very bizarrely surreal. He'd done Star Trek and he's talking about basically being homeless and living out of his car, looking up at a space while there's somebody on the moon. That's wild.
That life is like science fiction.
Yeah, it's very. And then the other thing
when
that's kind of funny
is
like
an astronaut on the $6 million. I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry.
Yes, but the other thing that's wild is, and actually appropriately to cut to that, is that when you see him as an actual astronaut, as William Shatner, the astronaut in the Bezos thing when he's in space, and you see the footage of him, and you see him, and it's just a momentary thing, and he has his hand on something, and he's looking out the window, and he's looking around, he's, oh my. And it's like a completely like natural, it's a Shatner reaction, but it's like a natural reaction, because he's seeing this for the first time.
It's a Kirk Death's reaction. Oh my. Yeah. So he says,
yeah. So that is hilarious.
Which is funny because he talks about his death scene in Star Trek. And how he wanted to go back and do another take on that. And I totally get what he was trying to do. And it would have been nice if they had done that.
I 100% agree. He was right. His instincts were correct. He was right on by quoting regulations. All right. But the other thing is that what about that great moment when he talks about Laurence Olivier at the Oscars?
Oh,
such a great moment. The film is called William Shatner. You Can Call Me Bill. And I think it's in theaters right now, or it's going to be in theaters. It's going to be streaming.
No, it opened on the 22nd.
Okay, it opened on his birthday. And interestingly enough, Mike from Jersey, I don't know if you know this, Shatner's birthday is only 3 days before Joe Masseri's birthday.
I actually forgot to put it together.
That's right.
Yeah.
Today being Monday, of course, is...
Oh, yeah.
Joe Masseri's birthday. Happy birthday, Joe. Happy birthday, Joe. Happy birthday, Joe. Happy birthday. Okay.
Calm down.
So now let me ask you this. The one person I saw it with, I actually watched this film with a couple of the boys. I had them come over and they didn't invite me to the thing at with Neil deGrasse Tyson, but they sent me the link. So I watched it and I took out my 6 foot Shatner Sandy and I put him in the living room, pretended he was there live. And one friend said they were surprised that... Anyway, so one friend presented to me that Keith Brown, who's been here on the show, said that he was surprised that there wasn't more Star Trek. And I wanted to know if you guys felt that the same. Did you feel like you're surprised there wasn't more Star Trek? I felt that there was plenty of Star Trek. I felt that's really only one small period in this man's life. He's done so much. And... so that's the first question. And then I'll come to the second question. What are your thoughts on that?
There was the perfect amount, because if you're a casual fan or a huge fan, there's a million other things to see him of resources, or just go back and watch Star Trek. There's a million things to look at with Shatner talking about Star Trek. So ad nauseum. So I don't think you need all that. I think there was the right amount in the documentary. I think you don't need to inject any more Star Trek, because then it's just... everything is just always about him being Captain Kirk, and there's a lot more to him than that.
And I like the fact that they try to get in there even if it's for a small amount, everything that he's worked on, even like the more obscure films like Incubus and The Devil's
where
Reign.
He spoke in Incubus, where he spoke in Esperanto, okay? All right? Yes. Let's not forget that.
Oh, which is, by the way, hilarious when you see the clip of him.
I have the movie. I own the movie. Go ahead.
And all the television work he did, when you're doing a film called Call Me Bill and it's about his life and career, you just can't, it's a large part of his life, but you just can't focus on that. I think they did a nice job of democratizing that.
100% agree. Now, let me ask you this. Second question is, did you feel they didn't have you on Star Trek, but you also didn't really get too much into relationships he has with other people, the wives, and or Leonard Nimoy? Did that surprise you that there was no mention of him at all, really?
I don't think so, because I feel like, again, I think if you were going to do that, then the documentary has to be like 4 hours long, because it's, I think to do all that and to do it correctly would be very dense. And again, he did the one-on-one conversation with him and Leonard Nimoy and stuff like that. So he's touched on those things in other projects. So I feel like, again, no, I feel if you're going to do that, it would be like, then it would be like a 6-part documentary about Shatner.
And right from the beginning, like I said, the documentary has a totally different tone.
Right.
And it's an actor looking back on his life and his career. And so it's not that stuff was excluded. It's things that he's covered before, and he's dealing with different issues in this documentary. So I can understand why it wasn't included.
Right. And I think the documentary helps solidify legitimacy that, frankly, that he deserves, because people don't, of a younger generation, don't really remember this as like in the sort of in the 70s and the 80s and the early convention days. Some science fiction actors were not necessarily written off as science fiction actors, including original Star Trek members. And they're not. They're legit. These are legitimate actors that were doing these jobs, and they were either good at them or they weren't. And I think that Shatner is more than the sum of his parts. And I think that was the point of the documentary.
And I was wondering if I know that there were a couple of shows left out, like the Tales of the Unexpected, Unexplained.
Right.
There are a bunch of shows left out. Dude, what about the one he did with Doug McClure?
No, but I'm saying, I wonder if those things that were left out were just things that maybe they had shot and just didn't fit into how they were,
I think,
documentary together, or they couldn't get the rights.
Well,
to see,
I have to say, for a guy who's been has 6 decades of work to look through, probably 7 decades of work to go through, or more, there's only so much you can squeeze into to a couple hours. So you're right. I do think it could have been a multi-part documentary if we wanted, like William Shatner, the 60s, William Shatner, the 70s. And literally, you could have plenty to say and plenty of things that happened that he did. And, you know, you didn't even get into him like at NASA with those shuttle launches or any of that. None of that's in there.
You you could 100% do a cable show that's 6 episodes about Shatner's career.
I do want to ask, before we leave Shatner, if either of you have heard this before.
You and Leonard had a falling out later in life, and actually you didn't speak to him in the final years of his life. You said, the feud is something I still wonder about and regret forever. Now, you never found out
what happened. It wasn't a feud. He just stopped talking to me, and I didn't know why. And I wrote a note to him. I had heard that he was dying, and I never got any response to it. And So this dear, dear friend of mine went to his death, and I don't know why I couldn't comfort him in his last moments.
Does that question keep going around and around in your head?
Yeah.
Yeah. And when he passed away, you could not attend the funeral because you had a commitment to a charity event. You sent your daughters. You got a lot of criticism on social media. Do you think that was fair?
No. Yeah. There's no such thing as fairness, but what... I was faced with attending a funeral or honoring a commitment made several months earlier to do a benefit with Donald Trump in Florida. And Donald Trump said later, apparently on multimedia, that I helped him raise millions of dollars for the Red Cross. And I thought, and I said this to the people attending the event that night, that we can honor Leonard's death and Maury Hurley's death last year by thinking about it. But the good deeds
that you do,
that we're doing right now, will live long after our names are gone.
I hear you. But you did honor his memory in a very special way. Can you share that with the audience? This is really cool.
So we invited people to do a selfie with the, with the selfie of the Vulcan salute that Leonard invented, by the way, and sent it to us. And we got 6,000 in the first day.
Jeez.
And then many, many more. I've forgotten how many, but it's up for a world record.
So every little thing you see there is somebody doing the sign.
Every one of those things.
Wow. I kind of
stole the idea from my wife, who's this wonderful photographer, who's doing concentric circles, the nature's circle, which she had done in photographs. So I kind of stole it from her.
Well, it's fantastic.
Is that not life is like science fiction esque?
It's wild. And first of all, how much of that money actually went to Red Cross?
I have no idea.
Yeah, and I'm like, you had me until you said Donald
exactly.
Trump.
Hey, like, how bizarre is all of this?
If I was Bill Shatner, after seeing that documentary, I'd commit Harry Carey.
Yeah.
So I'd be like, what have I done?
Right.
I can go to Leonard Nimoy's funeral, or I can do a charity with Donald Trump.
I get the Red Cross. That's I get that. But
come on now.
It's bizarre.
I can't picture Donald Trump doing a Red Cross event.
And Shatner had to be there for Donald.
I
couldn't make this up. If I told you this, you'd
be
like,
way
get out
he
of here.
Could. The only way that he could write this is that he would get Jeff Bezos to put Donald Trump in one of his rockets and have it explode like the Challenger.
Oh, stop.
That's the only way he can make it right. Then I could have new respect for Bill.
Oh, my God.
So there you go.
Okay. Tell me if you've heard this one.
Never done it before. I don't know the man, okay? I don't know. 50 years ago, there was a young actor named George Takei who'd come in a day or two in the week. He played his part. He left. I hardly knew him. Hello, George. You're over there. I was busy learning. Great, 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 great. I had a lot of work to do. So I was busy doing that, doing publicity, doing other things that I was doing, whatever it was. I was the leading actor with 10 pages of dialogue to deliver that day and 10 pages of dialogue to learn for tomorrow. And the day after that, and the day after that, and the day after that. So I didn't know. I literally didn't know. The 6 movies we made were a couple of years apart. Again, come in, hello, George family. I didn't know. I had no interaction with him whatsoever. In the last 50 years, the man has blackened my reputation. I pride myself on being a professional actor. I'm there on time. I know my words. I'm amenable to almost anything because what's important is making the performance and nothing else. I don't have to be there for the of a spaceship being brought out. One of the things he has against me, I wasn't at the debut of the Enterprise in some place. I was working. So he has demeaned me really badly, ugly. Every so often I'd get in touch with him and say, what are you doing? I don't know you. What did I do to you? What happened? I have no idea what his beef is. I have no idea who he is or what he is or what he wants. I've never answered him, but he has continued to spoil my reputation in one way or another. And finally, I thought, you know, that's enough. Why would one person in this large audience have a bad opinion of me because of George Takei? It upsets me. So I'm not burying any hatchet. I don't have any animus towards him. I don't know who he is. I do not know. I want you to hear me.
I
do not know who George Takei is, what drives him, what makes him. I have no idea who he is. He invites me to his wedding. I don't know him. Why would you invite somebody like me to your wedding if you don't know me? I haven't spoken to you in 20 years, 30 years. Why would you invite me to the wedding? Have you got a thought on that?
I don't know George.
Well, why would you? Since you and I don't know and you invite me, why would you be inviting me?
Because you're Captain Kirk.
There you go. Nothing to do with, I want you to celebrate with me and be joyful with me at my wedding. It has to do with what you just said. So I don't have any hatchet to bury. I do not carry a hatchet. I carry a peace sign. Okay?
Gentlemen,
I've actually heard
that
before.
Any thoughts there, Mr. Masseri, then, if you've never heard it?
I've heard it before. And when you play two things like that back to back,
yes.
The only thing that comes to mind is actors are a little bit self-centered. And under the stressful moments of whatever, he could have said something off the cuff or whatever and not realized what he said, because there are times like when you hear him doing an interview and he says certain things that certain things come out that aren't as digested and thought over kind of thing.
Right.
And maybe I would be interested if there's anything in all the footage that was shot of the documentary where, because he was being very introspective about the span of his life as both a person and an actor, that he may have touched on that. Now, he may have, and because of him being an executive producer on the documentary, he may have influenced what ended up in the final cut, but we don't know.
We don't know.
I think there's two funny things about that clip. First of all, I love Bill, but let's be honest. It's a little bit disingenuous to say that for 50 years, I don't know this. I know that he's speaking a little bit subjectively, saying, I don't know what drives him, et cetera. But he's like basically literally saying, I don't know the guy, which I think is a little bit much. That's the first thing. The second thing that comes to mind is there was a story that I'm forgetting his name at the moment, but the actor plays George Costanza on Seinfeld. He was telling a story about Shatner, and he was talking about how
Alexander.
Yes, thank you. That he was hosting, he was going to host the Shatner roast on Comedy Central, which he did. And that he was talking to Bill, and he was joking with him. He's like, hey, Bill, you think this is a good idea? And he's like, yeah, it's going to be great. And they did the whole thing, and George Takei had the bit with basically talking about how much he hated Shatner, but it didn't really sound like a joke, and the whole thing was over. And Jason Alexander said at the end of the show, Bill said, wow, George really hates me. So that's, I thought.
Yes, I will say this. He had the funniest line in the whole roast. I don't know if you remember it. Takei has, maybe it's because he gets so much good material out of hating Shatner. Because I don't know if, do you remember the line at all?
Was it like where he rhymes his name
with
something?
Yes, he goes, Bill, my name is George Takei, Toupee. And so, yeah, and it's pretty funny. But I say all that to say that he's an interesting man. I've heard all kinds of weird, crazy things, how he had the wife who drowned and did he kill his wife? All kinds of crazy stuff about, cause he has a film that he did with her called I Love to Kill. And I used to have the poster up in my apartment because I thought it was so,
it's surreal.
It's not a great drawing. And you just picture Shatner going, I love to kill. So it's just such a,
next to the Brainstorm poster.
Brainstorm is still, again, great film. Anyway, so we're going to talk about another film that is...
Just to add to that, of somebody who probably hates him, that one scene when he's riding that horse, I felt sorry for...
Stop. Listen,
he was a big man on a very small... That horse was too small for that Bill Shatner. That's all I got to say. So that horse looked relieved when
expression on his face. I was like, oh.
Listen. All right.
That horse is doing the next
roast. I got on a horse.
George Takei is going to ride
in on it. When I was in Acapulco, I got on a horse, and let me just tell you.
I feel sorry for that.
I pay money for that.
Not feeling me getting on it. So just want to say that.
I would pay any amount of money to see that.
I have a photo of me on the horse.
I
took a photo of me on a horse on the beach. For it's very Williams.
I don't think there's any cowboys in your lineage.
No, I was going for Taylor and Planet of the Apes. I'm on the beach on a horse. And they finally...
No, Taylor was skinnier.
Shut up. I was skinny then. I was a skinny guy on the beach. It's 20 years ago. I was on the beach, Acapulco, on a horse. But the horse was not feeling it. Horse was like...
I think the horse...
Were you on a little... Were you in a long
cloth? Glasses.
You know something?
Did they weigh you with or without
saddle?
Because they usually
remember
do
remember one thing. Death comes quickly to those who deserve it. Just okay.
Were you in a loincloth on the
beach? I was, you know, in your fantasy, yes.
He was like Bill riding bareback in that movie.
Something. He was bareback, but he had Nova. So anyway, we're going to pivot now to something I had no idea that Joe Massiri. First of all, I know that Joe Massiri is a freak, and I know he's king of the freaks, which is a title. People used to call me that, but Joe Massiri is the rightful king. I bow to you. You are the of all the realms of freaks. But I had no idea that you were a huge Ghostbusters fan.
For the first time in New York history, a room full of people froze to death in July.
It's an unimaginable evil with the power to kill by fear itself.
Like, literally scared to death?
Now it's headed straight for us.
Is something trying to get out?
Many things.
It's commanding an army of the undead.
I think we're all going to die.
Hold on your ass!
This could bring about the end of humankind.
Disgusting.
Yep. So, yeah. When I showed up for the screening, first of all, I didn't know.
Which you didn't
did
invite
not know
me to.
That so. I didn't. I forgot. You said you emailed me. I didn't see the email. Anyway, but Mike from Jersey, bait. Shut up. Something I'll come through that phone and throttle you. Anyway, so Mike from Jersey had texted me like, "Oh, is he gone? He got punches. He gone. He got punches."
I'm a huge Ghostbusters.
Yeah, I know.
Fan.
I know.
I was the kid when the movie came out.
I know that, yeah. And that's why I'm imitating you in that way. And he sent me that, and I was like, "All right, I'll bring the kid." Okay. And so I didn't realize, and then I show up and there's Joe Massiri, and Joe's like, "Yeah, you gotta help." And I was like, "What do you mean?" He's trying to swing his cane at me and everything.
So I'm not there yet, but when I am.
So anyway.
You'll be the first
know,
to
I'll
feel
be
the
first
impact.
To get I'll be caned by Joe Massiri. Anyway, and Joe is completely decked out in Ghostbusters gear. Shoes, socks, hat, shirt. I had no idea. So, Joe, for our listeners, and because I asked you this, and as a matter of fact, you know what? I'm going to go to us in the theater just before Ghostbusters starts, even before Mike from Jersey, who was late, which, how strange.
Dude, you know what? He was on Mike Sargent
time. First of all, don't even try it, okay, because Mike from Jersey, maybe back in the late 20th century, okay? But here in the 21st century, I'm always on. I'm Johnny on the spot.
No, you are not, sir.
I can cut you off. Mute.
You are not,
mute,
sir.
Mute. All right, anyway. This is us in the theater.
So here we are at a preview screening of Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. And Joe Massiri is completely decked out in Ghostbusters gear.
Except so, my underwear.
Except for the... Okay, I didn't need to know that. Okay, but here's
socks
my...
Socks or underwear?
That's true. You have socks? You have Ghostbusters socks? Oh, wow. That's really... Ladies and gentlemen, just so you know, it's disturbing. All right, so... When this movie came out, what was it for you? Were you a huge fan? Because I'll preface it to say that I think it is very hard to do comedy and horror. And this is clearly more comedy than horror.
Mm-hmm.
The only other film I think that really did it well compared to this is American Werewolf in London.
No, Evil Dead 2.
That's true. But Evil Dead veered more into scary than funny.
Well,
so.
2 was slapstick in the old...
Yes, it was.
Three
yes,
Stooges
it, yes, it
and
was.
Keystone
Let's not even talk
stuff.
About Evil Dead 3. All right, so tell me about Ghostbusters for you. I had no idea you were an Uber fan.
Well, it was the first thing where the nerds were cool.
Okay.
You know, and in a good way.
Okay.
And embodied everything. You had nerds, you had horror, you had comedy.
Okay.
You had cool special effects, science. So, and they fought the system because the way the city was coming down on them and stuff and whatnot. And it was a New York movie. So that was cool too. Plus, after this and the second one, I was a big fan of the cartoons that had all these great storylines, which
really?
Is really why I'm excited to see this, because this is based on one of the cartoon scripts.
got you. And so, and what did you like about the cartoons? The cartoons had more, like, really got into, like, you know, the mythology and various demons and things.
Yeah, and like they did episodes on different cool things. They had a vampire episode. They had a headless horseman episode. So, you know, they were really touching on and weaving in a whole bunch of stuff. And then later on, there was the new generations of Ghostbusters too. So this kind of goes now where not only is it based on a script, a concept from the animated films, but it comes full circle because you now have the new generations of Ghostbusters like they had in the animated series.
Now, let me ask you another question. What did you think of the female version, the female reboot?
I like what they were trying to do, but it didn't gel. And I didn't like what they did with the cameos that they had. It like totally disregarded what had come before. So
you don't consider it canon?
No, not really.
So you don't think they're going to make an appearance in this one?
Not from what I've heard.
No, I don't think so either. Now, do you feel like they should have diversified the cast or just kept it in the family? I mean, they got one other black character, but there's no Latinos or Asians or Indians or anything.
Well,
do you think that matters in today's, you know, you said it takes place in New York. New York doesn't look like this.
No, but I think what they needed to do was get it back to New York first, because the last one was set in the Midwest.
Right.
And once they get it into New York and they reestablish the canon, if they do more movies, then they can branch out even more.
All right, so then after the movie's over, I'll get your reaction.
Yeah. I mean, look, Ghostbusters is a business, and if it's happening all over the world, they eventually have to franchise.
Did you like the second film?
Yeah, I thought it was fun. I thought it tried to be a little bit too much formulaic like the first one. But I liked a lot of the things they did and some of the new characters that they introduced and, you know.
What about the one before this, the fourth one? What do you think of that one?
The first one is classic.
No, the fourth.
Oh.
One just before this.
I liked it a lot. I thought it was a fitting tribute to...
I did too.
What's his name?
Egon. Harold Ramis.
Yes. Who was great. And the fact that they continued the lineage by this being his granddaughter and
I
stuff.
Thought that was kind of a brilliant move.
Yeah. Made me tear up.
Well, it's kind of fun to see them all back.
Mm-hmm.
And they even brought in some other characters from the first movie, so... I hope it's good.
Is Rick Moranis still alive or is he dead?
No, he retired.
Okay.
He retired from movies forever. Just like, you know, Sean Connery and Gene Hackman.
Yeah. He was good in the Honey, I Shrunk the Kid films.
He was. He was good in almost everything, actually. I really can't think of anything I didn't like Rick Moranis. And even if the movie wasn't good, Rick Moranis was pretty good. All right. Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. Now, also here with us, we'll probably hear after the movie, is Mike from Jersey, who's down getting popcorn. So,
as Joe chews on popcorn.
So we did not actually in the theater give our review. So now we're going to give our review of the Ghostbusters movie. I'll start with you, Joe, because
yes.
Joe, you are clearly the Ghostbusters, the biggest Ghostbusters fan of all of us. Mike from Jersey, he's an overall fanboy kind of fan thing. What about you, Joe? What did you think of the movie?
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot. I felt that there was more story to it. I think all the characters got their due. I like the look of the film. I enjoyed the score, which gives a nice nod to who did the score.
The original score is Elmer Bernstein, which is a great score. As a matter of fact, I'm going to just play that theme right now. Okay, go ahead. And now, it's a great theme, and there's so many great pieces of just Elmer Bernstein's score, not even getting into the pop song. So go ahead, Joe, with your
I like the hybrid effects that are, some of them are puppets and digitized, some of them are totally digitized. They shot a lot of the interiors in London, and they seamlessly fit that into the shots that they did in New York.
Absolutely.
I like the blending of the story that encompasses the entire Ghostbusters mythology, from the films to the animated series to the computer games. And there was just a nice feel to it that they're building it up, that if the fans continue to come out and support it, they're gonna continue this and pass the baton to other people. And it was nice to see everybody back together again. And it was just, it left me wanting more. I was sad when it was over because I was having such a good time.
All right. And now, just for those who don't know, this is the fifth film in terms of theatrical films. There was the original Ghostbusters.
Ghosts.
Hello, Ghostbusters.
They're real.
You do? You have?
They're here. Ghostbusters.
Hey, anybody see a ghost?
They catch the ghost that won't stay dead. They're armed. They're dangerous.
Try to imagine all life as you know it stopping instantaneously.
And then there was Ghostbusters 2.
At the stroke of midnight, on New Year's Eve of the last decade of the 20th century, America's largest city is about to pay for the nastiness of its inhabitants. When that day comes, when the slime starts to rise,
the Titanic just arrived,
when ghosts start arriving by the boatload,
we gotta find the guys.
There's only one thing to do.
Sometimes weird things happen. Someone has to deal with it. And who are you going to call?
All right, suck in the cuts, guys. We're the Ghostbusters.
The superstars of the supernatural are back to nuke the spooks.
Two in the box.
Ready to go.
We be fast and
they be slow.
Make some time.
Don't put any of those old cheap moves on me.
No.
It's different.
I have all new cheap moves.
Raise your spirits.
If we don't do something by midnight, you will be remembered in history as the man who let New York get sucked down into the 10th level of hell.
And kick some slime.
Looks like a giant jello mold.
I hate jello.
Oh, come on. There's always room for jello.
Happy New Year!
Close them.
Ghostbusters 2.
You're short, your belly button sticks out too far, and you're a terrible burden on your poor mother.
Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Sigourney Weaver, Harold Ramis, Rick Moranis, and Ernie Hudson in an Ivan Reitman film. Ghostbusters 2.
We're the best, we're the beautiful, we're the only Ghostbusters.
Who you gonna call? Ghostbusters.
And that had the original cast, and it was a follow-up, a direct sequel.
Which I also saw.
Nobody asked you, nobody cares. No, I'm kidding. And the original came out in 1984, so it is literally 40 years later. I think the second one, what year did the second one come out? Am I from Jersey?
89.
All right. So that came out 5 years later. Now, jumping forward, we had the female reboot, which did not work, though I did like Chris Hemsworth. I thought he was pretty funny in the film.
Class 4 apparition. It's okay. She seems peaceful. My name is Erin Gilbert, doctor of particle physics. That stuff went everywhere, by the way, in every crack. Very hard to wash off.
We have dedicated our whole lives to studying the paranormal. Now there's sightings all over the city.
There are people out there that need our help. Holtzman, you're a brilliant engineer. Erin, no one's better at quantum physics than you. We can provide a real service.
I'm joining the club.
You guys are really smart about this science stuff, but I know New York. And I can borrow a car from my uncle.
You didn't disclose that the vehicle was going to be a hearse.
It's a Cadillac!
Let's go.
Let's go.
I'll let you. Next time. Okay.
Someone is creating a device that amplifies paranormal activity. And we might be the only ones who can stop it.
Holtzman, come on.
The hat is too much, right? Is it the wig or the hat?
There's a bigger picture at hand here. These ghosts can possess the human form.
The devil is a liar! Get out of my friend, ghost!
Ow, that's gonna leave a mark!
The power of pain compels you!
Ow!
And then we just had what we had the last Ghostbusters, Ghostbusters Afterlife. And Ghostbusters Afterlife, I thought, had some interesting ideas, a couple of great ideas. Definitely not capturing the magic of the first film, but a worthwhile sequel, in my opinion.
What are you doing here in Somerville, anyway?
Honestly, my mom won't say it, but we're completely broke. And the only thing that's left in our name is this creepy old farmhouse our grandfather left us in the middle of nowhere. Why'd you bring me up here?
Entertainment value?
What is that?
I don't know.
Somehow, a town that isn't anywhere near a tectonic plate, that has no fault lines, no fracking, no loud music even, is shaking on a daily basis.
Under the dining table now!
Hey, remember that one summer we died under a table?
I found this in my living room.
Whoa, killer replica.
A replica of what?
A ghost trap? There hasn't been a ghost sighting in 30 years. New York in the 80s? It's like The Walking Dead. Your dad never mentioned this to you?
It's just my mom. My grandfather died. My mom says we're just here to pick through the rubble of his life.
Wait a minute. Who are you?
Call it fate. Call it luck. Call it karma. That everything happens for a reason.
Come on, darling.
It has a gunner seat?
Now, this is the fifth film, but Joe, there's more than that. Tell us about what's more that most people may or that are huge, not huge fans, other than theatrical films. What else is in the Ghostbusters canon?
There's the two animated series.
Give me the years. When?
Yes.
Two from. Give me some details, Joe.
But you got to give me a second.
Just click away.
Well, so, while he's thinking, by the way, I should point out that they actually, for legal purposes, had to call the cartoon The Real Ghostbusters, because there was a cartoon called Ghostbusters that had absolutely nothing to do with
No, that wasn't the, whatchamacallit, that wasn't a cartoon. That was the thing with Larry Storch and...
No, I'm talking about a cartoon. No, there was a there was an 80s cartoon that came out that was were these characters that were Ghostbusters, and there was like a monkey in the group, and... No, there's an actual cartoon called...
Yeah. The Larry Storch animated series.
Oh, was that Larry Storch was in that?
Yes, and Chuck McCann, and there was the... and they had a gorilla.
While his name may not be instantly recognizable to all Ghostbusters fans, Storch starred alongside Forrest Tucker and Bob Burns in 1975's The Ghostbusters, a precursor live-action series to Filmation's Ghostbusters animated show. If you don't know the story, the existence of this original television series wound up causing a few headaches for Columbia Pictures, as at the time of filming the 1984 Bill Murray-led comedy, they were unsure if they'd even be able to use the name. A deal was eventually made allowing Columbia to call the film Ghostbusters, and as part of that agreement allowed for the creation of Filmation's Ghostbusters, the short-lived animated series.
Yes, okay, all right. So we are talking about the same thing. So for legal purposes, they couldn't call the official cartoon The Ghost, they had to call it The Real Ghostbusters.
And then there was an animated series by Filmation called Ghostbusters.
Right.
And that kind of played off of that a little bit.
And then the sequel with Egon, but there was like a new crop of characters.
Right. That was the Extreme Ghostbusters.
Right.
And Joe Basiri wins this round next week on Geek Fight. We will see if Joe Basiri, the reigning champ, can actually beat Mike from Jersey with his Ghostbusters geek knowledge. All right, go ahead, Joe.
But The Real Ghostbusters was 1986.
Explain The Extreme Ghostbusters. What's that? This is like a sidebar there.
It's a sequel. It's basically Ghostbusters Next Generation. It's a cartoon sequel to the original cartoon.
All right,
cartoon.
So wait. So how many cartoon series were there?
Two.
First it was The Real Ghostbusters, then The Extreme Ghostbusters?
Yes, and that was 1997.
But The Real Ghostbusters...
I'm trying to get some facts here. So what year did the original Real Ghostbusters start? And from when?
86 to 91.
86 to 91. All right. Now, Mike from Jersey, you can jump in with your energy.
What I was going to say, there were a few specials in there. There was a primetime. I think it was on ABC. It was like a Halloween special where they have to bust like the Tom Hayne, the ghost of Halloween or whatever. And so there's a few specials.
Who were the ghosts of Halloween?
Sam Hayne.
Who's Sam Hayne?
It's the ghost of Halloween, basically.
Sam Hayne is the ghost of Halloween. And you both know this. You're such both. And next week on Geek Fight, they're equally matched. All right, so.
Actually, I'll give you, hold on. I'll give you one more geek piece of information. Ooh. The character, the guy who does the voice of Peter Venkman in the cartoon is also the same actor who does the voice of the cartoon version of Garfield. The Garfield movie is... The voice is done by Bill Murray. So you get like a little bit of symmetry.
Thank you, Mike from Jersey. We appreciate once again your scintillating facts. All right, moving ahead now. So you're saying so there was the Real Ghostbusters, the Extreme Ghostbusters. Now, when did the Extreme Ghostbusters? You said 86 to 91 was the first one?
1986 is The Real Ghostbusters to 91.
And then The Extreme came when? 97?
Like 1997.
Mike from Jersey, right. Stop talking over Joe Basiri, who is an expert and legendary, okay?
Sorry.
And it's Spengler helping a group of young students.
Right.
Now,
so
what? Are you going to interrupt Joe Basiri again?
I was going to say, one of them is in a wheelchair is what I was going to say. Go ahead.
Yeah, get your panties out of your butt crack. Calm down.
He's excited. It's the Ghostbusters. All right. So now, and that went from 97 to when?
It was just one season. Yeah.
So now, when you say this incorporates all of those spinoffs
and the computer games.
Well, the computer games. So tell me about the computer games. How many versions of that?
There are just too many computer games.
Wow. It's a popular computer game.
There's one worth noting in particular.
that's the first one that they did for, was it PlayStation 3?
I thought it was Activision.
Yeah, it was PlayStation 3 and computer. And it was actually written by Harold Ramis and Dan Aykroyd. And they said that they considered it. This is basically the Ghostbusters 3 film.
I remember this. When it came out, they considered it the Ghostbusters because they're all in it.
Yeah, they're all in it.
And if you let it play as a movie, it plays out as what would have been the third most Ghostbusters movie. If you just let it play,
pretty much.
You don't touch anything and just let it play, that's what it would have been. Wow.
Yes.
And as a matter of fact, I think early days of YouTube, people did that and put it together and put it out there on YouTube as Ghostbusters 3. All right. So Ghostbusters has been around a long time. And you say what you liked about it was that it incorporated all the canon. Everything's in there.
Yes.
Now, they alluded to a couple things, and I don't want to give it away because I enjoyed the film. But they alluded to Ghostbusters Junior, or he mocked that. Is there such a thing as Junior Ghostbusters or anything like that? Like,
you got to take into consideration too that so at the beginning of the film, you saw the logo for Ghostbusters Corp.
Yes,
right.
All over the United States, there are organizations that are more than just cosplay. These people get dressed up like Ghostbusters.
More than just cosplay.
Yes, they have vehicles. They build their own proton packs and stuff and whatnot. To get patches and things sanctioned under the Ghostbusters franchise, they buy a license from the Ghostbusters Corp. And the nice thing about these organizations is a lot of them do charity work at hospitals and stuff and visit kids and do demonstrations. And some of them build, I've seen some great puppets Slimer puppets. And yes, because when the women Ghostbusters came out, we did a thing with Barbecue Films where we created a the people at Barbecue Films and Sony Pictures created.
But you said we. Who is the we? You? How are you a part of that?
I'm a part of Barbecue. Was part of Barbecue Films.
Oh, you're part of Barbecue Films. Oh,
yes. There you go. We created a Ghostbusters experience that we had the cars there. We had
It was here in New York.
It was in Brooklyn.
Yes, I remember this. Yes.
And don't lie.
Listen, New York is, as far as I'm concerned, Brooklyn's part of New York, you fool. It could have been in another state. It could have been again.
I don't remember seeing you there.
I knew about it is all I'm saying.
Anyway, and we did a kids' day. And there were kids were making their own slime, and we showed the movie, the original, and there were people in costumes and inflatables and all kinds of other stations that they could do stuff.
What year was this?
When did the Ghostbusters
Afterlife or the girls one?
The girls
was like 2019. What year was that, Mike from Jersey? Do you know?
It's like 18 or something. What I will tell they actually a group of these people visited my daughter's school and
look at that.
They did exactly what Joe's talking about. They had a thing where they taught them how to make slime.
2016.
That sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they taught the kids how to make slime and stuff like that.
Wow. All right. So there's your.
Back when you were a young
man.
That's
right.
Mike.
2016. I was 26. All right. Now, Mike, New Jersey.
Yes, sir.
Did you like the film? What are your thoughts on the film?
I did, and before I get into that, I just want to say two things. The two things are most film critics and Rotten Tomatoes can go to hell. Because, first of all, the whole notion of Rotten Tomatoes to me is just as a concept is ridiculous. There's the idea that some New York Times critic is on par with somebody from Albuquerque, and then you round all these people up and it becomes a score. And that in itself is ridiculous. But I just want to say, and I checked this, so these are the Rotten Tomato scores for the last three movies, including the female one. So the female one, the critic score, which is 2016, is 74% critic circle, which, of course, most people can agree was not great. Audiences did not like it. The audience score is 49%. So the last film, Afterlife, is 64% critics review, 94% audience score. Now, the film we just saw, Frozen Empire, 44% of critics liked it. 87% audience score. And I would say that's more or less pretty obvious. My theory is that for whatever reason, these critics didn't want to go see it, or they were bored, or whatever it is. They didn't have a connection to it. But they're completely wrong. And if you're a Ghostbusters fan, you will love this movie.
And what did you think of the female reboot? Because
it's god awful.
It's god awful. Now, Joe Masseri, you like the female reboot.
No, I don't think it's god awful. I just think it was a misfire because, what's his name? Fig, who directed it? Paul Figgis?
Yes.
And I love him.
He wasn't the guy to direct it.
No, he wasn't.
Because it just didn't have that feel. And plus, I think Sony tried to invigorate the franchise without turning and taking into consideration the material, the fans, the whole nine yards. They were just looking to reboot it as quickly as they could, because they don't have something like some of the other studios have in terms of franchises, like a Harry Potter thing or something. At the end of the day, the decisions that were made were more financial than it was fan-based. Right. And you can't do these things unless you cater to the fans.
Right. And my criticism, here's what I will say. The critics' problem with this last film is, I would say the consensus seems to be that basically they're saying, oh, Sony is really trying to beat a dead horse and really turn this into a mass franchise that never ends. And there is a grain of truth in that, of course. As Joe was just saying, it is a franchise that they're trying to grow as much as they can. That's completely true. It doesn't change the fact, however, that this last movie definitely gives you a lot of things as a fan that you're going to love. It gives you a surprising amount of time with some of the original Ghostbusters. I won't say too much, but you see a lot of the new ones as well as the old ones. And you see a lot of Easter eggs in terms of things that have shown up in other places. And I think it's the only Ghostbusters movie up to this point that has some actual genuine, not over the top, but some genuine scares in it.
All right, here's my review and my thoughts, and then I'm going to come end my review.
Which doesn't matter because you have Rotten Tomatoes certification, and we know what we think about the Rotten Tomatoes review, exactly. So there you go. But go ahead, deliver, please, First Amendment free country, go for it.
Right, first of all, I also have, you both are Rotten co-host certified. All right, but let me.
Okay, we
right,
love you.
Go ahead. Siri, okay.
Make a fool of yourself, we won't stop you.
That's my play. You go to hell, Joe Masseri.
One, two.
To listener sponsor radio at WBAI 99.5 FM New York and on the web at WBAI.org.
First of all, I was surprised at how good this was because I've not been that impressed with them. I was never, like, I liked the first one and I thought the second one was okay. I like the films. I like the sensibility of them and I get it. And I also think that it is hard to do comedy and horror together and make it successful. And as you said, Mike Fedrizzi actually has some real scares. I think this actually had some more scares probably than any of them. More scares.
Agreed.
More real scares.
Agreed.
But I think part of what made the Ghostbusters work is not just the concept. It's not just the semi-cheesy effects, not just the silliness, not just the comedy, but it's the characters and falling in love with those characters. And you fell in love with these characters. You love Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Ernie Hudson, Harold Ramis. You love them. You love their chemistry together. And chemistry is something that you can't just discount. So I think that's a big part of it. And I think that, yes, I agree with Joe Masseri that the woman, the female Ghostbusters reboot was a misfire. It was not terrible. I didn't hate it like people did, but it was definitely a misfire. I think that this worked. And like I said, largely because we got to see the original cast and remember their chemistry. If I were going to have a criticism, I actually think that Paul Rudd and, Carrie Coon are the weakest things in it. And I feel like they're...
And you know, though, but Paul Rudd, I do have to say, because I mentioned in my review, he seemed more genuine because you're so used to seeing him play that over-the-top father character in Ant-Man.
Yeah,
I liked him in this. He felt sincere in this. And I enjoyed his performance.
Can I finish my review? Okay.
Go ahead.
Can I finish
my
review? Okay.
Did you forget the Ant-Man films?
First of all, I'm going to... This is Joe Masseri's last show. All right. But what I was going to say is that What is that? What is that? What is that? First of all, I'm not eating. Okay. I'm going to have to hurt you. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't want you to witness this while I hurt Joe Masseri.
I demonstrate the quarter beat tempos. 1-4, 2-4, 3-4, 4-4, 5-4, 6-4, 7-4, 8-4, 9-4, and who for and what for, I don't know.
don't know. I don't know.
Continuing my review, I think that Paul Rudd was genuine, but I feel like it was completely an underwritten character. Who was he? He didn't really have much to do, really. And it relied on him just being charming and just being like Paul Rudd. And that was nice, but it was not a character. And sure, you have to assume that people like Paul Rudd. I think the original Ghostbusters, a lot of people like Bill Murray, a lot of people like Dan Aykroyd, a lot of people like Harold Ramis. They all were all likable, and Ernie Hudson was very likable. And having four likable people on screen and then throwing Rick Moranis and Sigourney, I think you had all these great things. I do think that the cameos in this film were better than Carrie Coon and Paul Rudd. I thought that Camille, Johnny and Patton Oswalt were terrific in their parts.
Patton was fantastic. He was playing up for his role in the series. That's all I got to say.
He was great. Great. Every line he delivered was just like a new classic.
You could tell he was in full nerd mode.
It was very, but again, that's the energy that you need. What you remember about the first film is that everybody was enjoying being there. Just post Saturday Night Live, where you got to have you, we gotten used to as an audience seeing 4, 5, 6, 8 really talented comedians all working together. And that's not something you see all the time. Generally one comedian and then lots of lesser comedians, but you had a film like Ghostbusters where everybody in that film was pretty much on an equal level. Ernie Hudson was not really known as a comedian, but I think he clearly held his own. But again, they were all well-known comedy figures, all at the same time, working together, all bringing a different energy. And I think that that was part of the chemistry and what made it work. And I thought it was great that we got to see them. So I think it worked. Now, my question is, for both of you, is to what Mike from Jersey started to allude to, is if you go to Rotten Tomatoes, which we all love, hate, and that's the amateurization right now of everything, but 44% for critics, 85% for the audience. My prediction is that this film will do well because the audience, I think, will...
It's 87 now.
All right, 87. Wait, let me refresh. Let me refresh. No, it's still... I see 84. Okay, but it doesn't matter.
Oh wow. Okay, it went down. Anyway.
Then 87.
Mike's having a problem now his computer. Leaving Dubai.
So it's 43% on... It doesn't matter. The point I'm making is almost like half. It's not with the clicking jump. So almost like half. And I wonder, and here's my question to you. A film like this, and we'll know more in terms of numbers as we go forward, but a film like this, do you think it's critic-proof? And do you think it matters? And more importantly, why are critics so against it and the audience loves it? I'm going to start with you, Joe Missouri.
Because critics are in the business of film, and they don't... Dude, I sit there sometimes, and I hear these critics talking, and all I have to say to myself is, how could you be a critic if you don't love film? Okay? There are... You have to love cult films. You have to love mainstream films. Look, I cover science fiction, fantasy, and horror, and I have what I call my guilty pleasures, okay? Like, one of my favorite film experiences was seeing Once at a screening with the director and the stars, and it's not a genre film. And it was a film I became passionate about and followed it from its release to when the two actors who created the music for it won an Oscar for a song for the film. That's what being a film critic should be, being immersed in the film and loving it. And yes, not every film is great, but there are some films sometimes where you're a fan. You like this director's work. You like this talent's work. And Ghostbusters is a fan film. If it's something that you're passionate about, you could dissect it. You could hate it for different reasons. But that basically says then that you have no attachment to the history of the film or its franchises. And sure, there may be some things, like you pointed out, that you had problems with and didn't feel it was perfect. But if you're steeped and immersed in the history of the film, the original, and its evolution to where we are now, it delivers. And it, like they say, if it's too loud, you're too old. Get over it, and then maybe you need to retire.
And your thoughts, Mike, from Jersey?
First of all, to answer your first question, is it review proof? The answer is yes, in my opinion. Second, as somebody who knows, certainly has been around a lot of critics, the problem, I think there's a few problems. One of them is the fact that...
I've been around.
There's a few problems. What I grew up with generationally, like you, in terms of what a critic is, are people like Vincent Canby and Siskel and Ebert, and these are actual critics. These are well-known, famous critics who've written for Chicago Sun or New York Times or whatever. Those are movie critics. Today, some of those people, very few of them, like Richard Roper, are kicking around. But for the most part, 90% of the critics are not traditional film critics. They're people like, frankly, myself, who will do content and occasionally even do something for publications like Polygon and various other things, which I have done. But basically people who create content. And these are people who aren't necessarily film reviewers or even film fans. These are people that may not just be strictly talking about movies. They may be talking about video games. They may be talking about whatever. But there's a new crop of critics right now. There's a lot of new crop of critics between the ages of 40 to 25 or whatever. And these are people who basically write for websites, and they're very jaded about the kind of films they're going to see. And it's always very telling when they go to see certain movies and the way they review them, like a movie like Ghostbusters or a certain comic book movie. And a lot of those reviews are usually, with their reviews usually reek of they're bored and they don't want to be there. And they take it out on the film. And they don't seemingly necessarily give it a good shake.
If I may interject and add on to that point, I've actually sat in a movie theater where there was problems with the air conditioning and heard a very recognizable name film critic turn around and say to somebody, I'm not giving this film a good review to begin with because the air conditioner didn't work.
Right. Yeah, so you're proving my point. You're talking about like a quote-unquote reputable film critic. But yes, I think that same analogy applies. People go in, like a lot of film critics today go in, they're moody. And it's why a lot of comic book movies, for example, are bashed. Now, granted, the majority of comic movies today, I think, certainly deserve it. And arguably with certain Marvel movies, there's definitely a certain amount of recycling. The problem isn't, you know, quote unquote, a particular genre like comic book movies, but rather whether movie's good or not. But the point being is, getting back to it, is the critics, they go in with a certain kind of attitude. They already don't want to necessarily be there for whatever reason. They're like, oh God, I got to see a Ghostbusters sequel. So they go in with preconceived notions. And I think that they don't view it as a true lover of films, as a true film critic would. They go in with a kind of a spoiled attitude. And I think that the real film critic who's willing to look at a movie in a completely fair way is a dying breed. And I think a lot of that has to do with the way that content, quote unquote, is how we consume reviews of films.
And to add to that too, look, the film critics the large majority of them don't have experience with films. The only film critic that I ever respected was Roger Ebert, right, because he had written a screenplay. He had been through the process for Beyond the Valley of the Dolls. And at the end of the day, at least he had a little bit more of an understanding of the business of films. And sometimes he brought that into his criticism.
Can I just ask you a question? You said the only film critic you respected. Is that true? The
back
only
in the day, yes.
Film critic you respected was Roger Ebert. Well, what about Gene Siskel?
Yes. But Siskel didn't do any. He didn't work in the business.
No, but I'm saying.
Yeah, but he was a good film. He was a good film.
Don't say. Don't defend him. I just want to hear Joe's opinion.
No,
you
I'm
had
just saying.
No respect for Siskel. Only Ebert.
Look, and there were film journalists. I don't know who they are. And that's the thing. What's the difference between a film journalist and a film critic? I've visited many film sets. I actually worked in the industry doing some script doctoring. I understand what it goes into making something and how back in the day when we used to get our hands on all these screenplays, it was interesting to see how something went from the written page to the final product that we saw on screen and the journey in between. And it's, yes, a collaborative business, but it's nice to have an understanding where, as a film critic, where did something go wrong? If a film isn't good, if it's a misfire, where did it go wrong in the process?
Whose fault? On that cheery note, I do want to say that you have been listening to Night Shift, and we've been talking in depth about two new movies, William Shatner, You Can Call Me Bill, a documentary that is, you said, where can people see this movie, Joe Missiri?
It's in theaters now. If they look it up on
they're in theaters now. And we've been talking about
Ghostbusters Afterlife.
No, not Afterlife. This is not called Afterlife.
This is Frozen Empire.
You complete fool.
Okay.
All right.
Just edit him out.
Anyway, Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire. Okay. As opposed to, all right. I'm not going to tease Mike Jersey further. We've been talking about in-depth Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire, and William Shatner documentary. And this has been Night Shift. And if you've enjoyed this in-depth, deep dive into geekdom, please consider making a pledge in the name of Night Shift. You can go online right now to WBAI.org. You go into the front page. There's all kinds of ways to donate. I say become a WBAI buddy. I don't know if you know what's going on. Things are, I know we must feel like the boy who cried wolf, but we're not. We are literally crying wolf. Okay, right now, as I heard in the irony of last week, just before I came on live, Hour of the Wolf was talking about how the wolves are at the door, and they are. So please continue your support if you supported us before. And if you have not, this is the time to just do whatever you can. Make a pledge in the name of Night Shift. You can play. I asked for a $30 pledge minimum because we've been on the air for a long time. In the name of Night Shift, you can also call 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. Joe Missiri, anything you can say to motivate people to make a pledge?
Look, you're out there right now and you've got streaming platforms. You've got digital content that maybe you're paying a subscription for and you see a value in that. If you're here and you're listening, be it Night Shift, which you enjoy, or as Mike mentioned, Hour of the Wolf, or any of the new or older programs that you're listening to on WBAI, we're listener-sponsored community radio station and a community. If you're part of it, you need to support it. We're not asking you for $100. We're not asking you for $5. We're asking you to support what you can. Give what you can. Is it a one-time donation? Maybe you want to become a BAI buddy. And just like a subscription to a streaming platform, you can give $5, $10, $15, $20 a month. It all goes to keeping the station alive, to bringing you the programs that you want to hear. And it makes you feel good because you're a part of that. And maybe you're in a better position than some of the other listeners that come to WBAI. If you can give a little bit more for the other people who maybe can't afford it, we understand and we appreciate that. So whether you become a BAI buddy or there's another show that you appreciate on this network, please give in their name, give in our name, step up to the plate. Just like that tip jar, whatever you can give is greatly appreciated. Do it now. We appreciate you.
Let me just say, if you guys, if you want to donate, or if you want to put off maybe Netflix or HBO or Apple TV for months,
put off.
You know, they're not going to go away if you put them aside for a month or two. BAI could go away if you don't help us out and pledge to the programs. Where else are you going to hear a show like Night Shift? Contribute. It could be a month. It could become a buddy. Do what you can do if you can, and we'll keep doing our show.
We're still in the theater. The movie hasn't started yet. And I want this question, because you're both flesh eaters. And my question is, we talk about how AI can change society. I'm sure you both have read that they're pretty sure that within the next 3 years, we'll have figured out how to communicate with almost every species.
Stop.
Okay. Yes, no, this is the thing. Now, here's my question. Once we can talk to chickens.
Oh, dude.
Once we can talk to cows and chickens and pigs, are we still going to eat them?
Okay, Dr. Doolittle.
Here's my question. That's the question.
I would keep eating them. But
you would keep, even if you could talk to a chicken, you would keep eating them, even if you saw shows.
You got to go.
Wow. So that's what you would say to the chicken.
Well, look how the cows are ruining the environment.
Look how the cows are ruining the environment. Well, look at that. Look at that. Look how the cows
are putting out there.
Well, you know, Joe, I think you'll be able to, Joe will be able to run on that platform, you know, when there's, you know, various movements trying to save the animals.
They're gonna make the synthesized meat.
They got the synthesized.
Well, listen to me.
Remember, I'm saying this. There will be all kinds of scandals with synthetic meat. It's just beginning. Trust me.
Oh my God! Wait,
please.
You go down the rabbit hole. What about people? It's like so and so had a relationship with a dog.
Well,
like,
if you could talk to the dog, it might change up relationships with dogs. You know.
Right.
I'm just saying.
Yeah. Tell us. I mean,
Haven't you seen those videos where people have taught their dogs to tap on different?
I've seen the donkey show in Tijuana.
What is
there's a
bunch of dogs that do this. So this is the thing. I'm just saying we're communicating with our pets, but what about when we communicate with livestock? And you've got it on. It's like, how boss? Like, what are you going to do? Do you think it'll change anything? Do you think there'll be movements?
Do you think people will have to give them reparations?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
What do you give them? 40.
I'll tell you what you give them. You give them Cowtown.
Cowtown.
They can just roam.
It sounds like a Sid and Woody Croft show.
Oh my God.
Cowtown. So there it is.
I remember dinosaurs.
on Tuesdays from 5 to 6 p.m. to the Independent News Hour, the weekly radio show of the Independent, New York City's radical newspaper. Each week, we speak with the activists, organizers, and social movement thought leaders who are fighting for a more just and equitable New York. That's the Independent News Hour, Tuesdays, 5 to 6 p.m., only here on WBAI 99.5 FM.
Oh, vaccination. All across the nation, keep you from catching monkeypox.
James McIntosh, host of Mindfield, which comes to you every Wednesday at 2 p.m. on WBAI 99.5 FM. Together with my co-host, nurse family therapist, Richardina Theodore, we delve into the explosive issues in mental health. Our mission is to help you know yourself, release your anxieties and your depression, and free your mind. Only on WBAI, the voice of the voiceless, can we voiceless ones be heard. Support the show and WBAI by donating at give2wbai.org. That's the word give, the number 2, at wbai.org. Or by calling 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. You can support the show and the station even more by going to give2wbai.org and giving a monthly donation of as little as $10 per month as a WBAI buddy to your favorite show on WBAI 99.5 FM.
Hey, this is Baby K.
And this is DJ Kyle McNeil.
Of The Sweet Spot. And we are so excited to announce our brand new time slot, Tuesday nights, 10 p.m. to midnight.
Same great soulful sounds, old and new.
Brand new day, Tuesdays at 10 p.m.
Only on WBAI 99.5 FM.
New York's Pacifica Radio.
Sweet Tuesday, darling, Tuesday, baby, Tuesday.
This is Julian Assange. You're listening to WBAI New York. Stay strong and keep listening.
This is WBAI New York 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. This is a listener-sponsored community radio station providing you a Pacifica state of mind since 1960. All right, let's start this thing now. As I usually say during the beginning of every program, why don't you take a listen to this.
You've probably been hearing and seeing these words a lot in the news right now. War and conflict. It's pretty easy to use those terms to describe not only the current Israeli assault on Gaza,